Hello, and welcome back to another episode of It's Not My Fault the OASG Podcast is Not Popular, episode 239. My name is Helen.
My name is Justin.
Every 2 weeks I go, I can't believe we're still doing this. I can believe that we're still not popular. I simply cannot believe that we are still doing this.
Somehow, especially me, like, even from, like, the beginning of the whole podcast, I'm still somehow doing this. Can't remember the last time I, like, took a break, aside from the usual breaks, like, just say, hey, somebody step in for me. I haven't done that in forever. But, you know, we just find a way to do it every Sunday. And then I think we had this podcast. Yeah, I remember we used to just post a podcast about Friday or something like that.
Yeah, for some reason, you would, like, edit them, like, really late, and eventually you were like, nah, I'm gonna not do that anymore.
I guess it's just the case where, I don't remember why we did it. I guess it was just timing. I don't remember. I can't remember why we did it. But yes, obviously, that we are a far cry from doing that anymore. But yes, we should get this show on the road. Helen, surely you've done something amazing in the past 2 weeks, right?
Amazing? No, I don't have time for amazing. Justin was just saying, you know, put down what you've been doing recently. And I was like, I haven't been doing anything new with, like, anime or manga or light novels. All I got is musicals.
And there you go. This is not just, I mean, obviously we're anime, manga, Japanese focused podcast. But at the same time, the point is, what have you been up to the past 2 weeks? That can count other things. So go ahead.
Okay, so I don't know why this happened to start with, but there's a musical on Broadway right now called Operation Mincemeat. Started in the UK, came over for a Broadway run. They're going to be doing a touring production starting later this year, I think. And for some reason, the cast was in DC on a Monday. I'm not sure why. They might have been filming something at the Smithsonian. But the Library of Congress was like, hey, we're going to have a free concert from them on Monday afternoon. So I got tickets, and I went over, and I just, like, listened to that for a bit. I'd heard of the musical, but I hadn't heard the music before. And I gotta say, I've been to a couple of events in this particular space. It's the Library of Congress's Coleridge Auditorium, which I think was specifically designed for concerts, since they do a lot of concerts. So it's fine for concerts, and it's fine for, like, discussions. But oh boy, the vocals. It is so bad for vocals. I'm just having moments that are being like, am I having a stroke? I just cannot actually make out the words to this. So I looked up the cast recording later so I could actually listen to it and understand what they were saying. And I was like, oh yeah, I really like this. This is quite fun. And so now when they actually do come for, like, a proper touring stop in, like, summer 2027 for a week or two, I guess I'll be one of the many people fighting to get tickets there. And wish me luck with that, because this musical has a cult following already, so I'm going to need a lot of luck to get tickets. And then on Friday, I actually saw a proper full musical at a different theater nearby. They were doing a world premiere of a new one called Little Miss Perfect. I think that one originated from someone doing a song skit thing on TikTok around 2020 or so. And so they developed it all out into a whole musical by this point. And this is only theater in Maryland. It's like, it's not precisely in the boonies, but it's in a part of the county that is an agricultural reserve. So it's kind of out there. It's a bit of a pain in the ass to get to. I'm surprised I've not hit a deer anytime I've driven to and from that theater. So they were staging it as a world premiere, and I didn't know this until relatively recently, but sometimes musicals and plays undergo a lot of changes between when they're first staged and when they end up on, say, on Broadway or off Broadway. I actually hadn't been aware of this. I thought of it kind of as more like a book, where once it's published, you're not typically making too many changes to it. Unless you're doing, like, a work of nonfiction that needs to be updated. But watching this, I was kind of thinking, I wonder if this one might go through some changes when it's next staged, since some of the staging itself, like the dance numbers, just felt... It felt like folks who hadn't done a lot of musical theater before were the ones doing the choreography and the music and such. Which I don't mean as a dig, but it just felt... a little inexperienced in some ways. It didn't seem quite as polished, is the wrong word to use, but didn't quite seem as refined in choreography, staging, use of props, use of scenery, musical numbers, etc. I don't regret seeing it, and it wasn't bad in that way, but I felt like it needs a couple more editorial wax taken at it, just to get it even better. So yes, and I'm seeing another musical this week, because another theater in DC has decided, let's take an old play and reimagine it as a musical, so we will see how that goes. I am so glad that the other theater I'm going to, it only had really expensive tickets left, and then I realized, oh, a lot of places have, like, a young professionals program, but most of them age you out of the program by the time you're, like, 30 or so. But the theater I'm going to this week at Arena Stage, theirs goes up to 35, so I was like, hell yeah, I still got, like, one more year I can use this to get cheaper tickets. Thank God. I may be 35 years old, but even I still wince when the tickets are, like, starting at, like, over 60 bucks, you know, like, just as, like, the cheap seats. Just,
Helen, it is 2026. I can officially confirm we live in a simulation. Somebody is making up the script, and it's just totally sick. You do know, just today, I was scrolling my Instagram account, and one of the ads literally advertised Operation Mincemeat, and I'm just like, okay, that's interesting. I guess it is that time of the year for going to see the musicals or whatever. And of course, randomly out of nowhere, you bring it up. Just like, what are the odds of that? What are the odds of that?
I know that it has been pretty popular. Its run on Broadway has been extended a number of times, and I even saw someone did a kind of tongue-in-cheek write-up for it in the New York Times recently saying, why have I seen this musical 8 times? And it's tongue-in-cheek in the fact that, you know, the author of the article understands clearly that they have become a fan of this, and they're just having, you know, a bit of fun at their own expense trying to figure out, you know, what is it about this musical, about a bunch of people coming up with a plan of World War II, the trick Hitler involving a dead body. Like, why has this grabbed me so much? But I must say, the music is very good.
Yeah, and of course you bring it up. So maybe I should actually go out of my way to see it myself. If I'm getting an Instagram advertisement, you just randomly bring it up. I guess that's a sign.
I think it is quite popular, so you might have to fight for those tickets. So, but yeah, I definitely recommend anything that involves a plot of fight Hitler, especially with, you know, insane plots involving a dead body.
I'm just gonna stick to currently my anime and manga realm for now. I think the musicals and everything like that, although there is, I'm sure, something out there that involves Hitler and World War II and all that stuff. Anyways, actually, since I bring up war, I'm going to talk about one war manga, war light novel I am reading. This is Miss Medic's Diary at War. This is one of the titles Jane Novel Club picked up, let's say last month. It was just one or two I'm going to talk about. I've only picked up these two titles. Some of the others were kind of interesting, but I'm just reading so much and literally consuming so much, I had to be more selective on stuff. But yes, I am reading this story about one medic, Tori Noel. She ends up remembering her past life as a guy who was very much into FPS games and RPG, just FPS, person shooters, everything like that. And that's essentially what he's bringing, that she's bringing that memory into the current situation where, yeah, there's war happening, people are getting killed in various bad ways. I would say, like, she's just getting totally, like, physically abused by her superior commander, but the problem is the superior commander is abusing literally everybody, and unfortunately he's just really good at killing lots of enemies. That's why he's still the supreme commander, essentially, or I guess the commander of the battalion of this particular group. But yes, the basic summary is that they're fighting a long war with this other place, and there's no sign of when it's going to end, and the fact is, their particular region is behind the eight ball. They're just really behind on everything. Like, they even had a situation where they tried to, like, spring a surprise for, like, one of the places they're going to attack, but they ended up getting surprised themselves, and more of the soldiers
So is this like 86 levels in terms of like despair? No, and
they don't focus on other characters. It has no commentary on racism at this point. So I wouldn't say that. I guess in terms of describing the violence, this is actually a little worse, maybe. Maybe. It's been worse than 86, but I would say it kind of gets into more of the... And then obviously there's no mechs involved in this, so I guess that's the other difference. It's really just guns and war. Like,
oh, I just meant like the kind of hopeless despair that like 86. It's like, yeah, we're sending you guys out to fight, and you're gonna die. We don't fucking care.
I guess because we have some information, but it's literally limited to just what Tori knows about generally like the game itself, or like the game they played. Against what's
okay? So has she been isekai'd into something?
Sorta. It's implied that they just remember that they had a past life, and they've just familiarized with first person shooter games. So that's basically what it comes down to. So I guess it's always an isekai in that sense. But yeah, it's always interesting because she has to basically she's a combat medic, but she's been essentially being also advised or taken into the combat to heal this psycho commander, who's just ridiculously able to kill lots of things, and that's kind of important in war, I guess. Gotta kill lots of things. But I like it so far. Obviously, again, it's more war oriented, so if you're not just into like ultra, well, I won't say it's ultra violence, but it does get into some nitty gritty details. And then I guess like a few parts ago, we got into one new soldier who ends up trying to sexually assault Tori. And the issue again, that even is not supposed to be allowed in that regiment anyways. The command would just not want that either. That no. And then if you do that, you're dead. You just not play around with that because we're at war. You just can't be doing that, especially with the lack of soldiers. No. So the rules, it's something about it, just how it's written is working so far. I'm just curious like this is written in diary style. So somebody found this information is reading it and is wondering like I gotta learn about more about this. So, I personally like it, very curious how it's going to keep going. So we'll certainly be more of that. And I'm also reading Proud to be a Villainess, which is the second title that I picked up from Janeiro Club, where...
I've been reading that one as well. But I'd already been reading the manga for a while, so it's not new right. For me.
So yes, I get to find out about why Relme really loves her sister, right? She totally loves her sister enough to be like, I hate you. Get away from me. Go to that other guy that's a really powerful mage. Just go do it.
Relme has just been planning her family's downfall since the age of 10, and she's now like 18. It's been a very long-term plan.
Very, very long-term. Make sure nobody actually suspects that I'm actually trying to plot my family's downfall, including my own downfall. But there...
Spoiler, plenty of people have, in fact, suspected. they just went along with it.
The only one who didn't know was Relme. Oops. That is the big twist. There is actually people who know on the inside, or who know that Relme's trying to plan everything, including her downfall. But we finally got to that part on the recent chat, recent part where we're now getting into perspective of Ormage, 80s Ormage, and how he basically figures things out, the situation. So, excuse me.
Oh man, I should send you a picture, since when I first started reading this manga, it was right when the Fontaine region of Genshin Impact came out, and he just looks incredibly like one of the characters there. And so it was just like stuck in my head the entire time, just like associating these two characters together. Like, let me just send you like the Genshin character who he looks like.
You have to send to me now, incredible.
Yeah, I am.
The link to this. Okay, I'm clicking the link to new.
I don't have a picture of this guy saved on my computer,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, okay, I see it. Yep, you're right.
He looks incredibly like Nouvellet from Genshin.
What can I tell you? You can only differentiate so much when you're depicting a certain type of character and everything.
And of course, I was also reading the manga where you see the characters the whole time versus the light novel where you only see images of them every now and then.
So yes, I like it. I'm having a good time with it. Definitely gonna keep doing that.
I really wish that the manga would get a physical release over here, since right now it only has a digital, like, subscription release on, I think, just Manga Up. I'd really like it to have a physical release, but I think I might need to go bother Square Enix about that. Oh yeah, it's up to multiple volumes in Japan. The only interesting thing is that the manga's up to multiple volumes, but we still apparently have only covered the first light novel. So the continuing discussion on the Day Novel Club forums is, how the fuck is this a multi-volume series? What is going to keep happening for this to extend beyond this first volume? Because it's up to like 6 light novel volumes in Japan, and we're just all like, how?
Yeah.
Also, why is everybody barefoot on the light novel covers?
Is that the...
Once you notice, you look at it and you go, wait, why is everybody barefoot?
Is this guy's fetish, or they just, you know...
Or is it symbolic? I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to, I guess, keep reading or eventually we'll get the... Maybe the after we'll share the reason why. Maybe the afterward. But yes, that's all I've been up to. Obviously, I've been catching up to anime, and soon enough, I'll be reading a couple more manga, so yay. More...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you were reading light novels instead of, like, working on this podcast earlier.
No,
so,
I did. So
you put Hannelore down.
No. I didn't even get a chance to read it, as I kind of figured, because I wanted to just catch up to more anime. I know Gasp, right? I usually just drop everything and just read Bookworm, but I said, no, I'll take my time.
You were the one who was complaining to me about there not being one available for you at Kinokuniya.
For some reason, have it, despite the fact that they even knew it came out Tuesday, but I guess they didn't order it in advance in time or something like that. Whatever the case, they just didn't have it. It, how it described to me, it didn't sound like it was going to have it either this week or even by next week. So I said, well, guess we'll be getting it for Kinokuniya anymore. Amazon it is this time, I guess. So I will, I guess, have thoughts about Hannelore's the focus of switch from Rosemary to Hannelore will be interesting. I guess I'll find it out and share my thoughts 2 weeks from now. So look out for that. But we'll get into some of the news. And yes, as usual, we just got news and news on top of news. I will say, though, a couple of news we kind of covered, but we needed to kind of expand on it because more information came out.
Yeah, because I think we first covered Media Due and Seven Seas, like... Was that one episode or was that two episodes ago?
It was last episode. Uh-huh. It was last episode.
Oh, yeah. So when we covered it last episode, the news had just come out like an hour earlier. And so a lot of news has come out since then. Like, if the name Media Due was familiar to anybody else but couldn't place it, like me, it's because they've been previously involved in some of those like AI manga translations over in Japan. And that was making everybody real concerned over here. And concerned enough that Justin and I think that they did not expect this amount of backlash, but they had to actually issue a statement on Tuesday.
Yeah,
so this was on like March 3rd, that posting on like their Twitter accounts and everything, saying that the company has, quote, absolutely no plans, unquote, to have Seven Seas use AI to translate manga and other works, and added that it, quote, remains steadfast, unquote, that Seven Seas will continue to use human translations and editors, that the acquisition will not result in changes in staffing, and that Seven Seas will continue under its existing leadership and team. And all of the responses I saw on Blue Sky were, I don't fucking trust you, I'm going to keep an eye out.
I mean, that's really all we can honestly do. I mean, we don't know. We really, like, look, this year for Seven Seas is probably going to be fine, because, like, most of this is usually done well in advance for translations and stuff, so anything that's been announced since last year and maybe even earlier this year, I think it'll probably be fine with everything. It's just moving forward, anything that they announce is going to be under extra scrutiny because of what Media Due say the goal is. They were pretty clear about what they wanted to do with the Seven Seas and how they will operate. So, any type of deviation from that seems unlikely, but obviously people will clock to that. It's like, wait, hold up. No, this ain't going to work. It's not going to work. So,
yeah. It felt like a bit of backpedaling when they were saying in their statement that their Media Dude translation system, which is their LLM, is, quote, designed to help Japanese translators manage their translated text when working on Japanese literature. Like, this simply felt like a bit of backpedaling to me, like, oh no, we did not know that the English speakers would get this mad about it. And I think I've said on this podcast before, but we've seen multiple companies in Japan try to start using AI translations for manga into definitely English, since that's what I'm familiar with, probably other languages as well. And as a reader, I'm just like, I'm so fucking insulted that you think that I can't recognize a good translation or not, that you think I'm just gonna, like, read this slop? Like, hell no! And I suspect I am not the only person who feels that way. And why we always bristle at the idea that someone's like, oh yeah, we're gonna replace human translators who have been working perfectly well with AI! Or, I think part of MediaDude's statement, or not the statement, but there also were some documents put out talking about the acquisition, costs and such like that. I think they said that they were going to try to
put out
like essentially twice as many volumes as they already do in a year. And it's like
Tokyo Pop flashbacks.
I have
Tokyo Pop flashbacks.
I mean, I was quipping on Blue Sky. Look, just because you're putting out more books doesn't mean that like the bookstore is suddenly going to magically get new shelves for you to put the books on there, or that you're suddenly going to start marketing enough to cover all of these new books. And they were also talking about shortening the production schedule, and they seemed to think that they'd be able to shorten it on, like, the translation, editing, lettering end. And people were pointing out that when it comes to printing manga, the largest chunk of that schedule is, in fact, the literal printing part, because you gotta, you know, work with the printer schedule, you gotta get things printed, bound, some quality review, you know, shipped to stores. It's like, that is actually the largest time. That is much larger than the time it takes to translate, edit, etc. And so it's like, this also to me feels like a company that may not be doesn't know that they don't actually know how some of this works.
Well,
I saw the Twitter and Blue Sky account Manga Alerts commenting on the documents, and they were saying, and it looks like that part of the information that these documents were using is from a company that MediaDude had commissioned, who Manga Alerts knows from past experience is like a company that kind of uses like AI to generate its reports. So it's like, oh man, were they even working with the right information there? So just, it's...
Now also to add...
Like everybody else, I'm just going to be fucking watching y'all. I do not trust you yet.
Also add, I guess maybe they also think it just flood the market digitally also too, because there's no, for real, there's no rules on what they put up digitally. Like, I'm just seeing, like, what they put on Amazon digital, and I'm just like, not just MediaDude, I'm just saying, like, in general, what random AI-generated crap just goes up on Amazon and everything. I'm just like, whatever.
Yeah, and I was having some discussions in, like, some private group chats about, like, does digital actually sell as much as they think it does versus print? And it seems like not necessarily, but, it's so hard to get numbers these days for, you know, how much physical volumes are selling, how much digital volumes are selling, unless you are the publishers themselves. So it's really hard to tell unless you're in one of those positions and can speak to what a company is specifically finding success with.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm obviously naturally all hoping that this obviously doesn't go through in terms of AI translation. Because again, anybody can literally just pick up a Japanese book or volume and then just scan it themselves and not pay it a dime or translate it. Use Google.
This is what I do sometimes myself, and that's why I don't pay for it. I pay for actual manga because it's like, oh good, someone who actually knows what they're doing more than Google.
And then I wish I could remember this one title that MediaDude released eons ago. It was so long ago. It's like this ninja manga. I can't remember the name of it, but there's a good reason I don't remember it. It was one of the worst translated manga I've ever read. So god awful.
And we've been reading manga for a long time, like, folks. Justin and I have struggled. Seen a lot of bad stuff.
I even tried to finish it. I really wish I could remember it. But I guess I just tried to scrub it out of my memory. But they released something that was just really garbage. And I can imagine, like, whoever there was, I don't think there was any credits for it. Good, the reason why there was no credits for it. Obviously, at the time, I don't think AI was as prevalent, but obviously, but tree and translation was not very good at the time then. But again, you're asking people to want to pay even $4.99 for something like that. That's not good business. It's just not. So yes, our basic extra thoughts is this is obviously something that if they try to implement AI translation, you're just gonna lose your market. I mean, no, for real, like.
And once burned, people are very slow to come back to a company burned.
Even Tokyopop,
I know plenty of people who still will not buy stuff from Tokyopop.
They obviously try to change their perception, especially since now Stu Levy is not completely involved with Tokyopop. They'd have a new CEO or something like that, so he's not completely involved. They still listed the founder, but in their credits, but like my understanding, he's not totally involved with everything there, or
he's no longer making bad Princess Eye poetry.
He's not doing any of that. But the point is,
Princess Eye, as in love, not as in AI.
Excuse me. But the point is, there are still people who are just like, I ain't dealing with Tokyopop in any shape or fashion anymore. It's just not happening. This serious. So if Seven Seas, they obviously got eyes on them. So if any hint of AI then no credits is in any of their books, they're gonna lose sales. And the whole point of getting acquired in this particular climate is being independent is just not apparently the way to go. Everything is just costing too much. And it does not seem like it's gonna go down at any point either. So that's the only reason you get out of being independent. I know people theorize about why you're getting purchased by another company, but the point is money is always going to be the big thing. So you don't, for Seven Seas, this obviously should be a good thing, because obviously this shouldn't theory free them up from anything that they couldn't handle independently, or they didn't want to deal with anyone independently. But if they find a way to have media do AI translations involved in this, then that's going to be a problem. They're just going to lose sales. And you're going to flood the market with books that are not going to be good, not going to really respect the creator's intentions as best as possible, and it'll just be kind of a waste of money. It just will. So we're hoping for the best. I always at least hope for the best in terms of these type of things, because obviously there are people that work in the industry that are hardworking and they take in other stuff, but they obviously have to work with the parameters of working in business. So you hope for the best for them, but yeah, they have to work it out. It has to work out. So we got that discussed, but we also still have to discuss more about Shogakukan and the situation there. Not going to obviously rehash everything involving Shoshi Yamamoto and the writer for Act Age being brought back into spotlight, but instead we're going to focus on the victim. She had released a statement under the Tokyo Kyoto Law Office. So the unnamed victim, a woman in her 20s, she is again filing a civil suit against Yamamoto, the teaching staff, and the educational corporation that operates the Hokkaido Genjutsu Koko Sapporo Satellite Campus, which was the distance learning high school she attended at the time. This is my best attempt to summarize it, but if you want to obviously read more of the details, you will have to click the ANN article that's going to accompany this. But to basically, again, summarize, the intention of this statement was to prevent further victims from suffering the same kind of abuse under the hands of the educational staff. She had noted, and this was also said last time, that during the initial settlement discussion, she requested that the publisher provide a transparent explanation for the break when Yamamoto's manga series returned from hiatus. The publisher at the time refused the condition, and the parties could not reach a settlement. Like everybody else, she was unaware Yamamoto continued to work with the publisher under a different pen name, but then also denied the headline that the Japanese weekly tabloid Shukan Bushin wrote for her interview, claiming she could never forgive Shogakukan. In fact, it was very much the opposite. She is a fan of many of the series from Shogakukan. And then she also noted that the publisher did reach out to her in private to apologize for the incident. And Shogakukan again corroborated that information in a new statement following Monday. And she also wished no further harm to Shogakukan nor for further series to be removed from the Manga One platform. And then she ended her statement calling on the public to refrain from escalating criticism of Shogakukanand Shukan Bunshin. The victim's lawyer added that the...
Justin has a note here in the script saying that Shukan Bunshin is essentially like a TMZ tabloid kind of thing, like the Daily Mail.
We talk about the other thing we're going to discuss with ShogakukanMy understanding is...
Because we have more Shogakukan news, guys!
My understanding for them is that they're like the TMZ, like Daily Mail type of thing. So that one, they'll have that one thing that they'll break. Like TMZ just randomly is that one thing that's like, how did they get the news? How are they doing it? But then also just be shameless. Like they hope... I think they had this Donna Kelsey sports story that nobody really needs to know about her home. I'm just like, why? So they just have stupid stuff like that, but then they have that one random thing that they'll expose and just like, oh snap. But yeah, they're just, that's why the victim had to clarify that though she could never forget Shogakukanwith that statement, that part's not true. So so that was a statement from her. The victim's lawyer added that the victim is appealing the court's initial ruling in the criminal conviction, as it did not acknowledge the school's wrongdoing in the case. There may also be further victims, according to the statement. This part got to me in a couple ways. I do assume this obviously means Yamamoto had more victims. That's not good. But I also sort of wonder if this is...
Are they hiring more people under pseudonyms? No. It's like...
Freaking Shogakukanand Manga One, we already kind of talked about, but I actually want to get to the schools part. Are they the ones essentially hiding other people that work for them? I have, like, obviously Yamamoto is going to take the focus, but I actually kind of wonder about their how they were structured, if the teaching staff was, how involved were they in this situation too, and if they're the ones that also have people who have committed these type of sexual abuses and stuff like that. So again, it's a situation that involves multiple publishers and people, and in this case also a school, and I suspect we'll get more information about that moving in the coming months, and maybe it's gonna even more than months, maybe years too. So this is just really awful all around. Like, there's just so many things that just failed in this particular, in this one particular, for this one person, and I'm just like, how did we allow this to happen? How did they allow this to happen? It's just really sad. So yeah, we obviously still have more. I'm sure there's gonna be more information come out of Shogakukanand in fact we have one thing that Helen had added to the script about Shogakukanthat was brought up too.
Yeah, so amidst all this going on, this is unrelated, but Shogakukanpublished a statement on their website on March 11th addressing reports of a former employee using workplace authority to sexually exploit a business partner. I'm quoting here from Audubon Media. While the company acknowledged that abuse happened on two occasions, it denied allegations of attempting to cover up the issue. And Shogakukanaddresses a report that was published by Shukan Bunshin, which said that I think they had published this report in, like, I don't know when they had published this report, but according to Shukan Bunshin, they said in 2018 when the employees sexually exploited a client company's employees, and in 2020 that the victim had filed criminal charges, but the case was dismissed, with Shogakukan's side apologizing and taking internal disciplinary action against the perpetrator. But apparently in 2025, the same employee was once again found to be engaging in misconduct, and after this, it was discovered the employee admitted responsibility and resigned. But I think Shogakukanis saying that Shukan Bunshin's reporting isn't quite right. And so there's he said, she said going on. But at the heart of this, Shogakukandid put out a statement on their official website acknowledging reports about all of this, which says to me that there's probably some truth that someone was doing some more harassing out there of someone who worked at an associated company, which is not great.
Yeah, we talked last time, Shogakukanobviously is not a company that's been very good at handling their internal handling of staff and how they've handled certain situations. We've been over that last episode, and I'm not surprised if this would be the case for this one. which they're denying, and I'm pretty sure there's a he said, she said, and in this case, they want to vehemently deny it, then I can sort of get what they're going for, especially considering who is publishing it. Again, the Shukan Bushin is that mix of TMZ and also trash at the same time. So it's going to depend on who you value. But at the same time, Shukan is not in a very good position because, again, they've allowed this entire pending situation to happen. So they're not in a good...
I mean, are we really going to believe them at this point? It's like, oh, yeah, we had good reason to think that nothing else is going to happen. It's like, did you? Mm-hmm. Did you?
Yeah, they're not in a good position. They're just not. We can't really believe them. They have to do so much proving over the next months and even years. And I just want to go back to the victim's statement. I believe she basically, again, she's being obviously nice about the situation. And I sort of understand trying to honor what the tourist for wishes. But I think if you're a serious organization, you have to obviously take serious measures. And leaving Manga One as is one measure they have to take. They can't leave it there. They just can't. Again, you have other publications. I'm sure you can figure out, I guess, what? Start a new publication, I guess? I don't know. But I'm sure there's resolutions that can involve Manga One just being dissolved. That'll at least show me that they're taking it seriously enough, because, like, people knowingly paid money for somebody who had this type of crime committed. Like, this happened over a course of years. They hid it. That is bad. That is problematic. You can't just slap this one in the wrist. You just can't do it. It's not happening. So there will be punishments, and it's still gotten serious about actually getting to resolving this. They will make serious decisions. So, I don't know if I have any further thoughts. Obviously, again, this is just really just tough to read. And again, the tough part really is knowing that there's probably more victims, whether it's from Yamamoto or from the actual school itself, or even at this point, if Shogakukan's been hiding manga artists or manga creators under a pseudonym that have committed like certain crimes. I'm already just like, the details are just going to get worse, I think, even moving forward at this rate. So, I don't think I have anything else to add, really.
Nope. I sure don't. All right, then. So, on the different side of the ocean, there is a class action lawsuit against Crunchyroll now. This was filed on March 3rd, which alleges that it disclosed user information to a third party. According to the complaint, Crunchyroll transmitted users' email addresses, persistent data and identifiers, device ID, and titles of specific video content they watched to Braze. The complaint notes that several titles hosted on Crunchyroll included sensitive material, such as mature, violent, explicit, and sexually suggestive materials. The complaint specifically names Tales of the Wedding Rings as an example that features sexually suggestive material. Braze Inc. was formerly known as AppBoy Inc. and is a marketing automation and customer development platform. And the company provides its clients with a software development kit, SDK, that can be embedded into mobile applications such as that of Crunchyroll. So the complaint alleges that Crunchyroll violated the Video Privacy Protection Act, I think, by not telling people that their email addresses, device ID, and viewing information may be sent to a third party for future advertising purposes. I believe that is what is at the heart of this. Funny enough, ANN reported on this on March 10th, and that day I actually had to put Crunchyroll app on my phone since I goofed up and I forgot to charge my iPad enough before lunch, so it kind of died in the middle of watching Journal with Witch. So I had to pull up my phone and continue watching it on there. And when I did put it on, the initial pop-up screen was actually mentioning that there might be SDKs in there, and it mentioned being able to opt out, but I sure did not see a way to initially opt out of those when I was fussing around the settings. I took a screenshot of it, but I actually took the screenshot because on that initial loading screen, it did not actually say Crunchyroll on there. It said Sony Pictures, which I thought was surprising. I hadn't noticed that before. But, yeah, I guess this Braze Inc. place now knows that Helen watched a lot of Journal of Witch in the past week. It was pretty good. I'm going to recommend it to my mom, but now it's like, I guess they also probably now know just how many times my mom has watched rewatched the Apothecary Diaries by this point.
Welp.
I have an idea of how many times she has, because every time there's a new login, you know, login from a new device, it gets sent to my email, and I just check, and I'm like, okay, yeah, it's my mom sending it to her. We're fine.
All good.
She's just at work and signed in at work, you know, to rewatch part of an episode.
So we have some notable U.S. publisher news to report. Repop's Popverse and The Beat reported this week that after 40 years, Dark Horse Comics founder and CEO Mike Richardson is no longer with the company. The Dark Horse, they have a statement. It essentially explains the company is implementing changes to modernize the business and strengthen collaboration across publishing, games, film, merchandise, and other key areas. This is from Jay Comis, who is the general manager of Dark Horse's owners within Embracer Group, Mineral Earth Enterprises, and he's also serving as the interim CEO. Have to note two things. Dark Horse is also being laying off staff positions since since last year, I should say. They're responding to increasing overhead, changing work conditions, and external economic factors. But I'm just like, I don't even think they announced it on their social account that they're letting this guy, Mike Richardson go. I'm just like, he was there for 40 years. Don't you get a little statement about what you did and everything? Ceremony's just saying bye from.
That's only people retire, Justin. But if you fire them or you lay them off, then you don't want to admit that. You only want to talk about somebody's past accomplishments when they make you look good.
It's a little dark. No, for real. I don't know. For that long to just be Sam Rose just let go like that, that's a little tough. Obviously, for manga related, Dark Horse worked for comics and everything like that, so manga was obviously published, but it was a big thing. But obviously, again, they were a manga publisher. Dark Horse not actually.
Except for that time that Berserk was one of the things helping.
Right, and then bringing over Berserk, right? I assume he was very influential in bringing that series over. So at least one of the reasons why I would assume. Well, okay, I was gonna say Carl Horn. I don't know if Carl Horn was around Dark Horse at the time for Berserk, but. But the point is, Dark Horse is a pretty big publisher, and the fact that Richardson could not go out, couldn't even get, acknowledgement from the company itself, that's tough. That's tough.
All right, so now we've got a couple of hiatuses and such to talk about. Ruri Dragon manga is going on hiatus until last week of April, which reminds me I'm probably a couple weeks behind and I need to catch up. Justin has a sarcastic comic in here. Now, this is the Studio Enge we all know and love. The Detective is Already Dead. Season 2 is being delayed to October from the summer. Not good, especially since it's season 2, so presumably they already had a lot of materials in hand, that could be reused from season 1.
I think they announced they were going to season 2 of this 2 years ago. I also want to say 2023, but I think it was 2 years ago they announced it, and they still didn't say anything until I think either late last year, and now it's in the late October. Concerned, very concerned for sure.
And also being delayed from spring to July is I Became a Legend After My 10-Year-Long Last Stand. This is going to be a TV show. And so that one is also being delayed. And Chitose and the Ramune Bottle is back, and it's going to be airing the last few episodes, episodes 11, 12, and 13, on March 30th and 31st. The sixth episode had been delayed from November 11th to December 2nd, and then that seventh episode had returned a week later, and then had to stop with the 10th episode at the end of December because they simply ran out of time slots in the year. So the anime industry keeps the anime industrying, which I mean nobody has workable production schedules unless you're Kyoto Animation.
Yeah, it's very, what a great industry, right, Helen? What a great, fantastic anime industry we have here. Just great. So fantastic. So Tomato Soup is back. The A Witch's Life in Mongol manga is going to resume March 25th. As a reminder, the manga ran on hiatus in October last year as Tomato Soup went on maternity leave. So I guess it's once it comes back March 25th, it's going to go back to its bi-monthly schedule. But we'll see. We'll see.
Actually, now I wonder if part of that break was also to help work with Sain Saru on the upcoming anime adaptation. I wonder if she was doing some of that in between nursing the baby.
Yeah, curious. Yeah, maybe both. If she was able to do it, yeah. So recently, the Skull Dragon's Daughter anime got announced. General Club's been publishing the manga. Seven Seas picked it up for print release, and it's fine. It's a pretty good manga. I'm looking forward to the anime.
I like it.
It is very
cute. It's cute. Of the two titles that J Novel Club has, which involves a dragon taking care of a young child, this is the one I prefer.
So,
and that very specific subgenre.
So yes, it ended up getting the cover of Comic Gardens magazine, and that is the, I guess that's the way to go out. That's the last cover for Comic Garden, which the Dragon Slayer getting anime adaptation. That's dang, that's a. Great, but also tough at the same time. So this is the final issue of the Comic Garden magazine, a season publication. The majority of the manga is currently serialized. It's going to go on the Mad Garden's Mad Komi online platform. Shinachiku's Kame Senu no Okan is going to move to the American online platform. The company stated both sites will continue to strengthen lines in the future. The Mad Garden explained that the staff said to end the magazine's publication due to structural changes in the environment of manga publishing and the current changing situation of magazine publication and circulation. Now, just to add, magazines being season publication is not a new thing. There've been some publishers this close over the past couple of years, but
it comes and goes in waves. That's what it seems to be.
I do also wonder if it's related to the fact that the manga market in Japan has shrunk for the first time in 7 years. It shrunk last year. I'm not getting into all the nitty-gritty numbers, but I will have the A&R article that notes the details. But yeah, sometimes I see the numbers, what's getting posted. It's obviously nothing like you usually see from Japan in terms of manga anymore. It's a little concerning in some ways, but also at the same time, I guess most people are just, again, going digital. That's what we're seeing here. Like, the shift from having things in print to versus now having things in digital, I think is more appealing to more people. I can see why Comic Garden magazine sees publication, and I guess we'll see if any other magazines will cease publication. And if we do, we'll obviously talk about it over on this podcast.
Yeah, I think what we've noticed before is that manga magazines coming and going seem to come and go in waves. It tends to not be just one at a time. So, especially with the news that this is the first time the manga market has shrunk since the pandemic, there might be another magazine or two that closes in the next year-ish. All right, and then we have a few obituaries to finish out this news section. The younger sister of voice actress Yuki Maeda announced on Maeda's Twitter account that Yuki died on March 9th at the age of 52. Yuki had been posting on her site formerly known as Twitter since August 2020 about having a lot of hospital visits, medications, and treatments. And announced last October that it was because she'd been suffering from a malignant sarcoma, which is a rare, aggressive type of cancer that originates in connective tissues in the body, and that she had had surgery, but it would just kept reoccurring. And so she had announced on February 26th that she was retiring from voice acting due to her health. She may have only been 52, but she did voice acting for 30 years. That is quite a bit of time. And unfortunately, passed away shortly after that, it seems. She did a number of voices in the Shin Koimi Musou series, Transformers. There's not a lot of titles here that I recognize, but there's a lot of titles. Some of them are 18-plus works, as Justin has noted in here, which is probably why I don't recognize them.
Yeah, under her pen name, or pseudonym, I should say.
Yeah, Kana Nojima. No shame there, just I am less familiar with those.
Yeah, just obviously, again, the fact that she tried to make it work for years and years, and unfortunately it got to the point where she just could not do it anymore and retired, not like literally 2-3 weeks ago, and now she's no longer here, so it's really sad. It really is.
Yeah. Fuck cancer.
The agency Haikyuu announced this past Friday that voice actress Masako Ikeda died on March 3rd from a cerebral hemorrhage, 87 years old. They had a funeral. It was held by close relatives only. Notable, mostly known as the Mattel and the Galaxy Express 99 franchise, as well as in the Harlock Saga anime. But funny, as I was reading the credits, I'm like, wait, I did watch Silent Mobius. So I'm pretty sure I've heard her as the Cure eons ago. Funny enough, I did just watch Aim for the Ace not too long ago, and I see Reika Yuzaki there. I was like, yes, I heard that too. And then Sharon and Space Brothers, watch that. Chimera Ant Queen, Hunter x Hunter, watch that. So I've heard her probably in a whole bunch of anime, and I was 87, and it's a long time to live. It's great that she lived this long, and it's still really sad that she's not around. It is still pretty sad. So my condolences to her family and friends, for sure.
And Kyoto Animation announced on March 2nd that its president and co-founder, Hideaki Hatta, passed away on February 16th at the age of 76. His family has already held a private funeral. He and his wife founded Kyoto Animation in 1981, and so both he and his wife have served as the animation studio's president and vice president, respectively. I believe his wife is still around. I believe she survives him. But still sad, regardless. Obviously, they were the ones in charge when the Kyoto arson fires happened in 2019, and so Kyoto Animation has had many lovely series over the years, but it's had some real hardships that are, frankly, a bit unique.
Yeah,
like, right. Normally you don't have to deal with terrorist attacks, essentially, on your company. Mm-hmm. Most of the time you just have to deal with somebody trying to, like, hack your emails, which is bad enough, not firebombing it.
But yeah, my condolences to Hideki Hata's family and friends. Obviously, again, very important person for the anime industry, just the type of standards that most anime studios don't have. The fact that Kyoto Animation has been able to stick with it is a testament to him and his wife. So it is a tough loss for sure. All right, good moment to some of the licenses happen, and we got a variety of licenses this time, so not the usual big publishers, but we did get some news to report for sure. So we're gonna start with Titan Manga, who announced exclusively on A&N that they licensed the following two manga series for the recent year: Tomonori Inoue's Huck the Air Pirate and the Princess of Steam, and hey, we just talked about Shinashiku's The Real Galia of the Underdog. We're gonna have another Gotenami manga being released by Dark Horse. Thank you, and again, it's adapting H.P. Lovecraft's book work. So we got the Dumb Witch Horror. It's gonna be released as a deluxe form, hardcover format. It's gonna be translated by Zach Davison. It's gonna be led by Steve Jutro, and the manga's gonna be slated for release this year, sometime in September. And let's see, we have Mad Cave Studios imprint, Nakama Press in partnership with Tatsunoko Production. They will release the first volume of his Kashan manga on my writer Mario B. Long and Kusanagi, also in September. This one's September 15th. This is based on the Shinzo Nigen Kashan original anime. So look out for those manga sometime in the near future.
Initially, Justin had this in the script as writer Mario B. Long, God tier. And I was thinking, wow, that is a pretentious pen name. Before realizing, oh no, God tier was the name of a previous series
I didn't
worked on.
I realize that. But
Mario B. Long, however, is still a strange pen name. It is simply not as strange as previously thought. So new English manga publisher Blue Petal launched a Kickstarter to release Sakura Kiruhara's Let Me Fix You, Kimi o Sumugu, which is a Yuri manga. They want to release this in English. The campaign had a goal of only $3,000 to reach by April 11th. So they reached that within hours, unsurprisingly. And they've also reached the first two stretch goals. I don't know about on Twitter, but over on Blue Sky, there was some discussion and debates about this, since $3,000 ain't gonna do shit when you're publishing a book. So it's like, is this a truly like a number needed to pay people for this? Or is this kind of just a way to like hype up a pre-order system? On their site, they mention what they pay for people doing like podcasts and stuff. And it's, according to other folks, pretty low rates, like 4 cents a word or something like that. So there was definitely a bunch of discussion about this in my circles. Apparently, one of the heads of Blue Petal is one of the OG founders of Seven Seas, so that does lend it some legitimacy. But I sent it to Justin when some people were like, you know what this reminds me of? DMP.
Not a name you want to not a name you want to hear, that's for sure.
Yeah, so hopefully we will not be reminded of DMP, the company that did a whole bunch of Osamu Tezuka's Kickstarters and did not end up releasing them, and what they did release was kind of bad and burned out several people who'd previously worked in the manga industry. Hopefully that comparison will not extend here.
And then we had Japan-based indie publisher Red String. They also are a localization company. I think they also work with Manga Mavericks books on certain titles. They announced they licensed the following at CitrusCon, the BL, the online BL convention a few weeks ago. Yoshiya Komatsu's The Elf Husband and Dwarf Wife. This title is going to be exclusively Omoi, formerly Azuki, on March 22nd. And they've also licensed Arakata's Funny Bone.
Amoy, the heavy bean site. Also, when people were discussing Blue Petal, I heard through the grapevine that apparently Manga Mavericks does pay their folks pretty well, although it sounds like they might be compensating for that with the heads of Manga Mavericks not taking much money. So
the only other thing also, my understanding, is also more expensive with their books compared to others, so...
Yeah, it sounds like they are using that to genuinely pay, like, the translator and local... folks who do the localization more, but yeah, it's hard to publish manga in the sense of money. All right, so Crossed Hearts announced a new title, Mei Fujimatsu's Time is a Closet, and it's going to be going into their Glam Beat line, which is a Yuri label they have that I was unaware of, but Glam Beat for Yuri. And Seven Seas announced a couple of audiobooks for their Siren imprint. I Like Villains, So I Reincarnated as One. First volume's already out. The Tale of a Little Alchemist Blessed by the Spirits also has the first volume already out. And Virgin Knight, I Became the Frontier Lord in a World Ruled by Women, which will be coming out on March 19th.
And then to close out the licensing section, oh, we can kind of cut this part in quotes. It's not quite licensing news, but this needs to be somewhere in the section. And do have titles that were licensed, I guess. But anyways, obviously Manga Plant is going to close at the end of the month. So that means anything that they had is going to disappear. Not so fast as Renta. So they announced they're coordinating a special transfer program that's going to allow Manga Plant users access to chapters, volumes purchased on the service. What those titles are, we'll find out in April. It's not announced yet. Obviously, due to publisher specific works, not everything's gonna be brought over, so we'll have to see what's gonna be on the list in April. But I guess for those who still had an account for Manga Planet and want to obviously keep the titles they chat up, the volumes and chapters purchased, this is obviously a good thing. So good on Renta for, I guess, taking over and handling it.
All right, moving over to streaming news. I think it was last time, or maybe the time before that, where we talked about Crunchyroll raising the price of their most basic subscription tier. Amazon Prime is also raising the price of its ad-free tier in the U.S. It is going from $2.99 a month to $4.99 a month. To remind folks, this is what you pay on top of already paying for a U.S. Amazon Prime subscription, unless you are me and just have so many ad blockers built in that it's kind of ad-free anyway. The subscription tier will now include 5 concurrent streams, previously 3, 100 downloads, previously 25, and exclusive access to 4K/UHD streaming. So, the features for the default Prime Video service are also going to be updated a little bit, but it kind of feels like... Yeah. It feels like it would be most economical to do this if you could split it with a friend, you know? I mean, 5 concurrent streams, come on. There's no way you could watch like more than like 3 concurrent streams at once anyway. And you'd be insane to do that. Just if you have like 3 different baseball games going on at once, like, or something like that.
Or something like that, right?
Yeah, kind of like what I do occasionally with the Olympics when it's like the gymnastics competitions, but that is a once in every 4 years, you know, event for me, so not something I would need. Multiple concurrent streams at once. Yeah. Oh, and also on Amazon Prime, Amazon Prime Video is now offering Lupin the Third, Zenigata and the Two Lupins, net anime prequel to rent or buy digitally in the US. It is available with the English language dub and in Japanese, and this net anime originally began streaming in various services in Japan, including Amazon Prime Video on June 20th. So I believe this is the first time this one's been available in English. Correct. Am I right?
All right, I get to yell this now. Queen Spy is back!
I'm a little concerned about why you're...
It is back!
You're excited about this,
I don't actually... For what it's worth, I actually don't know. I didn't even realize it was, like... I thought some servers actually had it. To be honest with you, I thought some servers actually had it. But yes, way...
I know I should make this a safe space and shouldn't be, you know, judging your interests, but we all know that's not who I am, so.
I'm not actually watching it, but I know Queen's Play was like a really popular thing. Uh-huh, so uh-huh. I was like, wow, I didn't even realize it was gone. But anyways, Wave Corporation's new anime streaming platform, Oceanvale, announced that it has begun streaming the Queen's Play Vanquished Queens original video anime on its service. So if you want to watch more Queen's Play, you could do it on Oceanvale, I guess, for those fans who actually liked Queen's Play back then. Way back then. How old is that series?
Is Oceanvale still that new? I felt new. It's like a year old new-ish. Now.
Yeah, I think it's still... I don't know if it's been a full year yet. I don't think it's been a full year. It's still kind of new. And it also, again, wants to still be kind of like, we'll do the 18-plus stuff or the near 18-plus stuff. We'll also do the not 18-plus plus stuff. Like Blackjack. What? So yes, Oceanvale is also streaming the Blackjack OVAs with the English dub. So that's on their service now. So look at that, Helen, you get a mix of not hentai, and then also hentai, but then also...
Blood and gore. Sorry, not blood and gore. Sex and gore.
There you go.
G-Kids is going to be screening more Ghibli films in 4K for the US and Canada, including Whisper at the Heart and The Secret World of Arrietty. They're going to be screening with Japanese audio and English subtitles, as well as the English dub. I feel like there's Ghibli Fest like every year now with streaming various movies in the theater. So at this point, I'm just like, yeah, this just happens. This isn't even news anymore.
The 4K aspect is the news part.
Yeah.
Yes, go 4K. Let's go.
And then I had not heard of this streaming service before, but ODK Media's North American streaming platform, Amazon TV, began streaming the Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood anime with English dub in the US and Canada on Friday. The anime is available to watch on demand for free without the need for a subscription to the service, which is in fact a rarity these days. And the service will add the anime with the Japanese audio and subtitles in English, Spanish, and Portuguese later this month. Apparently, they are the site streaming the Magic Kaito 1412 dub, which I would guess is why Justin is familiar with this title.
Yes, that
and
is
not.
Also why I think we bought Animation TV specifically because of this a couple months ago. Because it was like, what? Am I going to have to add this to the streaming service rotation now? We got to add Animation TV. Got to do it. I guess so. Be considered. But yeah, happy for them, I guess, to have this on their service. Very happy for them. And I guess to close out the streaming section, got a report. We obviously got the spring season coming up, and Door Hero is not going to be just only on Netflix. Crunchyroll is gonna add, has added the for season one of Dorohedoro on the service, and gonna have season two too. So, strange way Dorohedoro season two has been advertised by MAPPA. There was literally nothing, no news of that for a while.
I mean, they're not. It's not MAPPA doing season two, right? I thought the staff formed a whole new studio to do season two.
MAPPA's still doing season two. I guess I'll check quickly, but yeah, I don't think they. Maybe they have new staff for it, but I think it's still.
No, I thought it was like the old staff were going to break off and make their own studio just to get it done.
Wish I was quicker on the job, but.
You can just edit it out.
I am not editing any out, but yes, it's still MAPPA. But yeah, and it still has a returning the same director too. So yeah, still MAPPA. So yes, but the way it was advertised, like literally nothing, no information that like came out for like a while, and then all of a sudden, trailer, it's all out, and it still looks like apparently pretty good. So okay, I guess MAPPA is still MAPPA. I guess somehow. And then the Retro Crush has had a couple of solos to their service. So they added Sasuke, Bubblegum Crash, Star Musketeer Bismarck. And then apparently they're re-releasing their brother, Hakuye, Legend of the Moby Dick, and Astro Boy. And going to add the Blackjack, the complete OVA series, in April. So yeah, more Blackjack on two different services. Yeah.
It's weird news time, but Justin, I think you got to start us off with the weird news. I think you have to like give the spiel first.
So, you know, when Vermuse decided to come up with this podcast, what, 20? Helen, it's been 10 years.
Yeah, it's been like 10 years.
So we were trying to.
I did not think this podcast was going to last as long when I signed up for it, just to be clear.
Before, like, when Muse suggested we do a podcast, I didn't think I'd be doing it this long. But then at the same time, I didn't think she would not be here. And then also I'll be. Pick up the remains and having to discuss the Pokemon Company having to say the White House did not have permission to use their Pokemon Pocotopia game box up for their latest slogan. What in the name of... Why are we discussing this? Why? but yes, in case you've been living under...
Justin said, in case you've been living under a rock, and yeah, I have been living under a rock because they don't either don't post these on Blue Sky or I have, like, nuclear blocked everything so I don't actually see... this trash slop that they're putting out.
It's bad.
With copyright infringement out the wazoo.
Does copyright infringement matter? Can we just take what we can and nobody, like, we can stay stuff and, oh, we're gonna threaten you and send a lawsuit.
Okay, yeah, maybe I should be focusing more on the war crimes part of this,
But yes, obviously, Pokemon had put a statement, and then also later on, because it also involved, like, a bunch of other stuff involving Yu-Gi-Oh!, the voice actor of Yamayugi and Yugimoto, Dan Green, also released a statement decrying what the White House is doing, especially with that video statement. And then eventually the official Yu-Gi-Oh! Account had to say the White House also used the Photoshop permission, which is bad. You gotta get permission for everything. So, yeah, this is, there's issues here. But we already knew there's issues. I have not even sure what to say. This is not something when this podcast started years ago I'd be discussing. I guess I'll close to the other news statement where, again, Muse, if you're listening to this, why would you let me, why did you leave me to do this? Why? So yeah, Nintendo is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, well, before it is the White House, you know, breaking a whole lot of copyright infringement. Now it is, Nintendo of America is suing the U.S. government over tariffs, since the tariffs thing has been going back and forth in the U.S. court. We essentially had the Supreme Court saying, no, you can't do it, and then Trump that night throwing a fit. I believe that is, like, literally how reporters who were in the room when he got the news described it as, and reimposing things. And so part of the confusion is that people may, in fact, be owed back the money that was spent on tariffs, and so Nintendo of America is filing a lawsuit saying that, yes, it wants that money back now. And I don't know about you, Justin, but between the depleted Department of Justice and Nintendo of America's lawyers, my money is on Nintendo. And that's not just because everybody who I knew who worked at the Department of Justice was fired last year.
And just
Actually, no, my cousin might have been involved in that kind of stuff if she was still there, because I think she dealt with, like, financial crimes.
And also, Nintendo's history, when they do this, is usually very successful, so...
Nintendo comes in with the
big guns.
Yeah,
they literally waited a year for this. They like, we're not playing here. It's time.
Well, no, I don't think they waited a year necessarily, because I think they filed this pretty soon after the Supreme Court's ruling, since that's what everyone was waiting on. Everyone was waiting on that ruling to come out. Mm-hmm. And because of how slow the U.S. justice system is, it takes a while to get something before the Supreme Court. Frankly, the fact that this happened within, 365 days of those tariffs first being announced is pretty good. And then, we only put this one thing in here, but there was kind of like a running gag this past couple of weeks of nobody understands embargoes anymore. So, there was a new Evangelion shot short. I think they were showing it before a movie or something, and people recorded it in the theater and were posting cam rips online. And so Studio Kara was sending, cease and desist takedown orders to various people, telling them to take it down. And for some reason, I do not know if this was intentional or not, those emails they sent included a 4K version of the short attached to them. So of course, people were then watching that instead of the cam rips. Maybe that was intentional. And then about a day later, Kara just put the new short up on their YouTube account themselves. And so it got 2.7 million views in the first 24 hours.
Like, how do you let this happen, Kara? How do you let this happen? And
I'm kind of wondering if it was a, we're so pissed off you're watching the cam rips. For the love of God, at least watch a good version of it. I'm kind of wondering if that was it.
And then I didn't...
Oh no, it would be terrible if people actually watched the proper version of this instead of a shitty, cell phone camera video of it.
And then just to add to Helen's Nobody Knows Embargoes Anymore. So Anime Corner had put up news about the latest ReZero season because they got the press release from Kadokawa saying this is the embargo and that's when it's supposed to go up. Then, of course, Kadokawa sent a email saying that, no, actually, we messed up. The embargo was this day at this time. So Anime Corner had to defend themselves, saying, "Hey, we didn't. What embargo? We I don't know what you're talking about. We put it up."
Yeah, because I know you showed me the screenshot of the emails with like, if it coming in at like 10 a.m. saying embargo like 12 a.m. and then like another email an hour later at like 11 a.m. saying, "No, actually the embargo was for 12 p.m."
Your a.m.s and your p.m.s proper here.
And if I recall correctly, when I sent you the link to the Blue Petal stuff, you were also like, hang on, why do I have a press release for that? But that's embargoed until, like, the next day, like, 24 hours later.
I mean, I guess it's fine. Honestly, that part's not the base of deals. Just kind of like, could just had it available.
It was kind of strange, and it also means that Justin shot down my idea for the episode title being Nobody Understands Embargoes Anymore.
We'll never understand embargoes. Never. Just won't. All right, so literally like last year you would never have thought like, oh yeah, you'd see Luffy and Elmo collaborate on a project or anything like that. There's no way you could have thought about that.
Actually, no, I would have, because that One Piece Netflix version was pretty successful. I kind of would have expected this.
Netflix has at least collaboration between short video between the American children's program Sesame Street and the live action One Piece, but obviously it takes Elmo and Monkey D. Luffy, aka Naki Godoy, who is Luffy, who's joining Elmo to teach him up a very special Japanese word, the lovely Nakama. Can't believe that.
I was sharing the video of this with some friends, and my friends were like, "Kaizoku fan subs must be right now."
How does that still last all these years? Like how decades even? I'm going years, decades. It's been One Piece isn't that long.
You cannot translate this word Nakama. It's like, nah, man, it means like your gang, your close crew, your ride or die friends, your BFFs. Like, we most certainly have ways to convey this in English. But now Elmo knows a new word, at least, so I guess some good came out of this.
I guess I'll do actually this one. Back after 10 years, so writer Shuo Shitori had announced on Twitter that he and illustrator Kipu's No Wind Light No is going to come back it is back, and it's gonna not only come back but then also conclude with the 14th volume in June. So yes, you can take a decade off and still return to create to finish your work. It can happen.
Or you can take even more time off, because Hiromu Shinozuka launched a new entry in their Miramo Zippon Shoujo manga series 21 years after the original series finished serialization. The original version was Mirano de Pon, launched in September 2001 and ran until December 2005. And it's now March 2026.
We just can't. If you feel it in your bones, just like we gotta go back. We gotta go back. I guess you can go back.
Do we really want to go back to 2005 though?
Do we want to go back to when Samurai Champloo was created though?
Not really, because I never liked that anime. I watched the whole thing and I just never clicked with it.
Well, even if you don't click with that, nothing will stop you from hearing about a live-action version happening of Samurai Champloo. What?
This is true. This will not prevent me from hearing about it.
So yes, the Tomorrow Series is going to adapt Samurai Champloo into live-action. This is the One Piece producer is going to be handling it alongside the original series creator, Shinichiro Watanabe. I only just want to say good luck. Hope for the best. Looking forward to hearing more details in 2030. What?
Isn't this the one where it, like, the people who are, like, putting it together are the ones who did the Cowboy Bebop live action? Or am I mixing this up with something else?
No, it's that was a different studio. Definitely a different studio. The One Piece, at least the One Piece, they know what they're doing at best. The Cowboy Bebop, they didn't know what they were doing. They did not.
All right. And so now, that's the end of the episode. Justin and I both have things we want to be watching. Not anime for either of us, although I probably will keep watching more Bean Counter tonight because I need something light on in the background as I attempt to do a whole bunch of hand sewing for cosplay. I am questioning my own life choices at this moment in time. But Justin, where can people find you?
On Twitter, once again, retweeting Three Houses. Everything just disappears, but not Three Houses art. Three Houses is eternal. It exists forever. But yes, I'm still on Twitter, @comment_nomi. You can check out the Oshi.com for recent features. You can obviously follow the social medias for all the pre-order and sometimes, obviously, manga, sometimes anime, sometimes other random stuff if it piques my interest or have time news involving Japanese pop culture. And you can obviously subscribe to the Oshi Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as to Spotify, or as to any artists if you have. Or subscribe by email. Yay.
And if people want to hear more of my own ramblings for some reason, you can read them over on Blue Sky at Wandering Dreamer. Or you can listen to the other podcast I co-host at Manga in Your Ears. Or rather, Manga in Your Ears is the name of the podcast. On Blue Sky, we are under Taiku Podcast. That is TAIIKU Podcast. Also the name of the website, taikupodcast.com. But I will say, we are coming up on April 1st soon, which means it is going to be soon time for our annual Light Novels in Your Ears episode. So, we might not be covering any manga for a little bit.
No Trials and Tribulations type of Light Novel this time, huh?
No Trials and Tribulations this year. All right, folks. Until next time, bye!